Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
This is the first part of a two-part interview with Ava Yu. We concentrate on the first part about her time in China and the second part on her journey.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the great honour and pleasure of being joined by Ava Yu, who's a global cyclist and a writer, and we're speaking across WeChat to Ava in Korea. So hi, Ava. Hi, thanks so much for joining us. We connected on WeChat a number of months ago when you were in Shanghai, and then I followed the fascinating journey you had cycling all the way from Shanghai to London. So really in this podcast interview, I'd be really keen to hear first of all about your perspectives in China and that journey. So it's great to have you on the introduction today. So, Greg, could you kick off with a brief introduction to yourself and that then, first?
Sure. My startup journey started in Israel back in 2013. I was a global marketing manager for a Korean big data company, and then during that time, I also started startup interviews. And the next year, 2014, I was a business development to Silicon Valley, sent by the same Korean company. And I still kept on doing the interviews. And finally, in 2015, I challenged myself and I went to China. I became like full-time journalist for a Chinese tech media, TechNode. They're the official partner of TechCrunch in China, and so yeah, it was a really big media. Being by media, both Chinese and English, it was a real challenge for me to learn Chinese and write in English as a Korean native. But it was a really great journey. I never regret it working in China, and finally, last 2018, I wanted to challenge myself in a really the opposite environment as a tech blogger. So I left the job and I started cycling from Shanghai to London following the Silk Road. And as I go, I interview the startup entrepreneurs in every country I visit, and I held seminars as I go. And finally, I arrived in Korea last month, so it's like really fresh new kind of story. Yep.
That's excellent. No, that's great. So really, for the first part, I think the thing that's fascinating is someone who's come from Korea, where it's tech is pretty much leading edge. And from looking at your what you've written and the posts you've done on sort of TechNode, I think you've been impressed by the ecosystem that's developing now within China. Could you give us some of the highlights and what you've seen of the changes in tech and business models taking place in China now?
So what really fascinated me about China is how widespread mobile payment is, and in China, Facebook and Google doesn't exist, and Chinese startups fill in that gap by creating their own version of those services. And so I was particularly like covering WeChat, and it's something more than just substitute of like WhatsApp or Facebook. It also created really interesting business models using their WeChat public account, creating content, or a WeChat mini program, which allows you to make a basic application. So nowadays, Chinese startups don't try to make an app. They don't want to launch an app. They instead start on WeChat. They make a WeChat mini program, and then they spread it around And yeah, that's how they started their business. And monetization works really well within WeChat compared to 0.03% in Facebook. WeChat has about 6% user monetization percentage. So it's more likely that as a business, as a one who wants to start their business, to open a mini program or public account on WeChat to start their business. And I think working on this cycling journey project, I started a public account on WeChat, and yeah, I had like 2,500 views on my post. I didn't monetize my users, but it sure was a really good way to attract Chinese people.
No, certainly from what I've been following over the last number of years as well, as you're saying, the WeChat and the platform now, it's a super platform. And the way they monetize the platform rather than just selling adverts, which becomes irritating in many platforms, the monetization by providing applications and providing value and providing opportunities for purchase. China and WeChat is way ahead in terms of those sort of models.
That's right. I really agree.
Any other sort of areas you're seeing in terms of delivery models, rental models, transport models that are now happening, and that within China? Because I think it's moving ahead on many of these fronts. I'm working in the sort of electric vehicle sort of space and that at the moment, and seeing how some of the models working in those places and consumer goods sort of space. Any other particular areas where you feel are being now disrupted as tech and business models change?
So in terms of rental models and vehicle, China is a really good market to start all those. I was I kind of observed how Mobike and Ofo started in China, and I reported all that, how it expanded, how the copycats followed, how the copycats died. Now seeing having some problems the money you put in when you register the service.
Yeah.
So they're also having problem on that, and their globalization. In terms of rental model, a lot of followed their model, and so I think now they kind of saw consolidation of each market. And I think so far bike rentals and charging bank rentals were most successful, and it was interesting to observe their bikes in Europe as well. So I would say so far they have been doing quite well on their sphere. And about electric vehicles, yes, they're now Unicorn is a electric vehicle, NIO, and they're based in Shanghai, and they're doing quite well. And also BYD, as a traditional battery maker, they produce electric vehicles using their own batteries, which really put down the price. So they have some advantage there. So for now, the one that comes to my mind are those two players. It's a Chinese car manufacturer, but think there's a lot of trials on that part. I think it would be better to also keep focus on Baidu, on their Apollo project, on their self-driving cars. And those are all taking part in China.
Fascinating ones there. And you highlight NIO as an example, and I've been following them for a couple of years. And certainly when I visited the NIO showroom in Shanghai, which is next door almost to the Tesla showroom, it certainly struck me that NIO is being designed and developed for a mass market, dense urban environments, as opposed to Tesla, which, you know, is for suburban US affluent sort of customers. And the business model and the approach that NIO's taking with its design teams in Germany and its IT teams in California and its Formula E racing teams in London, it's very much a global business already in its perception and drive.
Right.
So how are you seeing the investment markets different in China, sort of to the rest of the world, in, you know, and that investment ecosystem? Is it varies between London and California and China? How do you see that being different? And maybe from your perception of what you've seen in Israel and that as well.
It was really interesting to see venture capital market in China because, firstly, they're really high risk and high return. For example, the Sequoia Capital China, who invested in Jume, I think they received 117 times return of their investment. So it's really high risk, high return. And in terms of leading the investment, the venture capitalists really want to like take the lead. They sure want to take lead and let others follow. So it's a really big deal. Say if there is a really fascinating startup and say the top one and two venture capitalists are there, then they really fight over this startup who's gonna take the lead, because this being on the top list of venture capitalists in China, since there is a huge competition, it's really important. So yeah, that's kind of one culture. And secondly, always in China there is a trend. I think the trend is really easy to kind of notice. Because it's like, sometimes it's like 3 months, sometimes it's like 6 months. And when you see the investment news on TechNode, for example, you know what's the full swing. Like once one startup model, like one business model is successful, say for example, vehicle models are successful, then the same investments will keep on like going for like say like 3 to 6 months until it sees the winter. Yeah. So it's like, wow, China is such a fascinating market, and it's interesting that things happen in a huge scale. So you always see the leading ones, and you see the following ones, and you see how they kind of break into the market and expand. So it's really fascinating. And I talked to the foreign venture capitalist, the Korean VC who has been in China for 10 years, and they told me how competitive is Chinese market compared to Korea, for example. And yeah. So for foreign venture capitalist also to kind of like get into China market is also very, very competitive. Thinking about the culture and their language, of course, it's really tough but fascinating.
The other major dynamic, of course, that's happening in the investment market in China is the Tencent and Alibaba corporate venture capital funds, and depending which one of those invests in your venture, then that could determine the destiny in terms of its growth and which platforms it expands on. Have you got any perceptions, insights on that?
My God, I really thank you for mentioning that. That's true. I don't know if foreigners are used to Three Kingdom. It's a really important part of Chinese history, and it's for Korea or China. It's a really well known novel and a history book. So just like that, I think BAT is really being the Three Kingdom, and so every time they see a kind of hero or they try to kind of bring that hero to their kingdom so that they become like really successful in that sphere.
Yeah.
Say, Tencent investing in O4, for example, and Alibaba on Mobike, then it becomes like a battle between the two. And it's for all the spheres, like O2O and food delivery, taxi. There was always competition between the two players. And wow, as a user, you kind of like enjoy seeing that because they spread coupons all around to use their service. And so, yeah, as a journalist, it was also really fun to always observe, like, which kingdom wins the one industry.
Yeah, no, that's great. Just to clarify, some people who don't know China that well, so the three kingdoms you talk about and BAT, those represent Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. And
that's right.
As you said earlier in the interview, there are some parallels to Western companies. So Baidu is a bit like Google in terms of the starting on the search engines. Alibaba is a bit like Amazon, and Tencent is a bit like the Facebooks and the WhatsApps. But their ecosystems now are much broader and much deeper than the Western companies, I would think. But BAT, as you said, are the three major kingdoms, and that within China for the last number of years. What's your perspective on the current and future sort of innovation within China and relation to intellectual property?
First of all, they're really kind of taking it serious. I mean, on the IP side. So in WeChat groups, in Chinese, like, WeChat groups, they're talking about how important is IP, and they make sure that the group members in their room kind of abide by the rules of IP. And I was also considering that. I wanted to make sure that nobody kind of, like, copies my trademark. So before I start my journey, I registered on Chinese trademark. It took me some money to do that. It was like 3,400 RMB. But I think it was really worthwhile. And Chinese companies now know the importance of it, so they're being quite kind of careful on that. And as a foreign company coming to China, I really recommend them to do the same, like registering their trademark, because there are some vicious Chinese people who kind of catch what's being popular in overseas market, and they register their trademark, the foreign trademark first, so that they lose the fight in court.
Yeah.
So Apple actually lost the battle last time, so they had to pay a lot of money to the Chinese person. So it's a real issue, and yeah, Chinese people now kind of know that.
Yeah, and I think Ian Harvey is on the board of my business as an advisory member, and Ian was chief executive of a business in the UK which is a technology transfer business spun out by the government, and he was asked by the Tsinghua University in Beijing to create the intellectual property program there going back a number of years ago. And Ian has written some papers on this, and very much his view is that the Chinese, you know, as a developing economy going back 10, 20 years, understood that they needed to improve their intellectual property. They put a lot of effort, a lot of time, and a lot of money into putting the infrastructure there, and he reckons now it's one of the world's leading, you know, places to register intellectual property, and the process is there for protecting it, and the Chinese now really understand the value of it, and they are now playing by the rules that are international rules, but they play the game better than some of the Western companies. If the Western companies don't register their trademarks there, then that's their, that, you know, that's the rules of the game, and they need to get forward with that. So I certainly see that Chinese companies now are becoming smarter at it for their own protection in country and outside.
Right, that's right.
So where do you see the sort of China skills are strong, and where do you think they could be supplemented from skills from outside of China? You know, as we're now developing new industries and we're now developing new technologies and business models, where do you see the China being able to work with entrepreneurs and funds outside of, you know, globally?
So first of all, like being in China, I realized that Chinese people are quite creative. Their business ideas are sometimes like really crazy, and sometimes when I kind of introduce one new startup that got huge funding, Korean entrepreneurs ask me like, oh, how can we do the same thing in Korea? So, wow, I was really amazed. And it was a knowledge sharing company called Funda, and later on, it's for real. Silicon Valley VC, it was a Y Combinator VC, and he took the model and started a new version in US. So, and I think he also said that he got the idea from a Chinese startup. So the Silicon Valley version of it is called Whale. So yeah, it was an interesting example. And as for the second part, what can foreign markets kind of provide for China? I would say, first of all, it's really tough for foreign startups to start in China, because in every sphere you see, there's so many competitors. If you find your own industry on ITG, it's like a dictionary for all the Chinese startups. Say, for example, let's say like gay market in China. Wow, there's so many players in gay market, lesbian market. There's any industry you think of, there's so many startups. Yeah. So it's really hard to get into the market. And so I think as a company who has a niche in technology or their reputation, they have a good opportunity to try in China market. For example, there was a British company that offered the safety kind of for milk powders. And it was hugely successful because there was a really big scandal in China because of the contaminated milk powder.
Yeah.
So I think it was really successful. So in that terms, now China, both China and Korea, is having a huge trouble because of the air pollution. And if there's a startup, for example, solving that problem, I think it will be hugely successful.
Okay.
Now, so it's really a matter of like knowing the market, knowing how to get into the market using WeChat account or WeChat mini program, and speaking the language, getting a really smart Chinese business development, maybe, yeah, all that.
Yeah, no, it's great insights there, and certainly I'm working on a couple of ventures in that at the moment where, you know, it's around retail, it's around payments, it's around fashion, and as you said, the technology around using the platforms, the technology around using QR codes, around using mobile payments, the different way the social media interacts, I'm certainly learning and trying to bring those back into the ventures that I'm working with. And because I did a video post a few weeks back, and or sort of last year when I was in China, and I described what I described as China's got 1 billion teenagers. And I don't mean that literally, but I mean that the Chinese people are all acting like teenagers and youngsters in the West on how they use their mobile devices, and the applications and the services are now being tailored and that for them, and all age groups and all demographics, and that in China are doing things which are very different.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's really interesting how they play with their phones. I mean, just for example, like if you get on a train, especially the slow train, and you get the average seat, not the bunk bed, then wow, you observe like so many Chinese people. They all watch videos on their phone, either talk or their short videos. It's really like everybody follows one stream, either like old people or young people. They're following the same stream, and I think you got a point there.
Yeah,
like a huge number of teenagers in China. Yeah.
Yeah. So great. Look, that's been a great insight and that into China.
This was the first part of the interview with Eva. Subscribe and listen to the second part, when she talks about her journey cycling from Shanghai to London.
Really appreciate your time, Eva, and thank you.
Thank you so much, Andrew, for inviting me to your podcast. It was, yeah, it's like, wow, I really love podcasts because it reminds me of like who I am, what I did, and like what I'm going to do, and really make like focus on like kind of my mission in life. And so, yeah, I really thank you for this.